You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, The Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And we're delighted today to be joined by the entrepreneur Sharmadine Reed. Sharmadine is the founder and CEO of the beauty booking app BeautyStack. A former fashion stylist and brand consultant, she is also the founder of the cult nail salon Wah Nails. In 2015, she was awarded an MBE for services to beauty. Sharmadine, welcome to Table Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sharmadine, we're going to start where we always do, at the beginning. What are your earliest memories of food?
My first food memory is being collected from nursery. So when I was 3 years old, I remember my first day at nursery and being collected on the half day, because, you know, they only leave you for 3 hours there as a little tester. I remember being picked up at midday by my mother, who was just 19, and she took me around the corner to my grandparents, and she sat me in front of the TV watching cartoons and then put a plate in front of me of scrambled eggs, beans on toast. And I just remember feeling, this is the happiest I've ever been.
That is such a comforting first memory. That's lovely.
And I still love the taste of it to this day. So yeah, that's definitely my earliest food memory.
And what were mealtimes like in your house?
So traditionally in Jamaican households, which is where I'm from, so my father, who I'm not in contact with, is Indian, and my mother's side is Jamaican. So there's definitely a really wide-ranging palate that I have, being English and Jamaican and Indian. The way that Jamaicans cook, which with the research that I've kind of done on the history of food, is you get it really early in the morning and you cook all the food for the entire day and you leave it on the stove. So for example, there would be a pot of rice, like rice and peas, a pot of vegetables, because my grandma was vegetarian, and then there would be a meat dish, which my grandfather would often cook. And you wake up early, you cook them, so you're kind of woken up with all of these really strong smells. And then the food is left there, and then people come in and out the house throughout the day because everybody's working different hours, different shifts, and then people just help themselves to whatever's in the pot. So my earliest like home mealtimes in my grandparents' house tended to be me spooning some rice, some vegetables, and then just the meat gravy, because I was really squeamish over like meat cuts. It's taken me like 15 years of living in London to go to St. John's for the first time, because I was like, I can't handle tripe, you know, oxtail, you know, mutton, all of these Jamaican foods. So I would just have the gravy, which would be insane. The gravy would be like so special. So yeah, and then when my mum and I moved out of my grandparents into our first house with my little brother, we always had, you know, a sit-down meal after school. And my mum was so young, she's still learning to cook herself, right? She hasn't automatically learned how to cook. So often if we didn't like it, we would just sneak into the back garden and like dump it in the grass and then run back and then put it back on the table. But I remember once not being able to leave the table. Well, all the time, you couldn't leave the table until your plate was cleared. Do you know what I mean? We grew up with not a lot of money. You had to make it last, for sure.
And those traditional dishes that you talk about, particularly at your grandparents' house, did you learn to cook from them, or were they just their domain?
I actually didn't learn to cook Jamaican food, and it's one of the, like, banes of my life. It's actually quite embarrassing that I can't... Like, I can cook, but it wouldn't taste as authentic. You know, there is no way I could cook curry goat and like contentedly serve it to my family. No, that would just not happen. And I think it's because I was so focused on like school. I know this sounds so, you know, random, but I would come home from school and I wouldn't be hanging out in the kitchen. I would either be reading. We had a sitting room with a library in it. I'd always be reading my books, you know, by the fireplace there. I was not hanging out in the kitchen apart from to get the food to eat.
And what about school food? I mean, do you have happy memories of school food?
Loved my school dinners. loved. Both my primary school and my secondary school had amazing food. By pure chance, like, my primary school was this absolutely wonderful, like, very Victorian classic hall-based primary school with two quads in the middle. I remember eating steak and kidney pie, and then they would put a copper jug in the middle of the table with, like, you know, milkshake, like, really gross now that I think about it, but like mint milkshake or strawberry milkshake. And I remember just eating, always wanting to go back for seconds. And my favourite pudding was like a sponge cake with jam in it. They just had like a really dense sponge cake, which I love. And yeah, I loved eating at school. And my school was very, like, the meal times at school were very familial. Like, you would help each other. Like, people would be on turns to serve the cutlery or to serve the milk. A child would always be nominated, like, you're in charge of putting the milk on everybody's table. So it was like everybody had a role, which I really loved. And I also remember about school, we grew, you know, like when, I don't know if this is normal or not, I assume it is, but you know, you grow cress in an eggshell. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
So I remember growing cress in an eggshell and thinking, wow, I am eating something I made. And then in summertime, you would cut the cress, you would have cress sandwiches, and then everybody would be out in the beautiful quads in the gardens by the little pond eating their cress sandwiches. And I just remember being so satisfied, like, by the, you know, the beauty of the school and the gardens and the pond, and then I'm eating this, like, cress sandwich. I absolutely loved it. And then at secondary school, I actually went to a school 20 miles away in Shropshire, so I'm from Wolverhampton, and I went to Thomas Telford School, which was like a very unusual school. It actually started at 8:30 and finished at 4:30 every day. So they served you breakfast, lunch, and if you had to stay over for any clubs, they served you a full, like, supper as well. And I remember, like, just having so much food all the time. There was, like, I remember breakfast being, like, you know, blueberry muffins, beans on toast, sausages, like, cereal. There was just an array of food to choose from. And then same for lunch. You just had so many options, and I loved it. I also played a lot of sports, so I was always hungry, you know, because I was playing sports all the time. So, yeah, I definitely have positive memories of eating at school. I loved it.
Sounds amazing. I mean, I want to go to both of those schools as an adult.
Yeah. My school was actually, Thomas Telford was wild. We would only have two lessons a day for 3 hours each because they believed in deep learning. Every child had a laptop, a Cambridge Z88. Every child had a swipe card to get into lessons. There were no bells anywhere. And this is in 1995. It was an incredibly progressive business and technology school. I've done business lessons since aged 11. So it definitely was, it was an incredible school that really shaped my thinking of achievement.
Sounds amazing.
It is also worth noting, when I was younger, I spent so much time with my grandparents, and my granddad actually had an allotment in the garden. So I used to always help, like, I'd be patting down the soil after he would, like, plant his seeds and stuff, and he would grow broad beans, pumpkins, carrots, potatoes. And I remember we always used to pick the peas and then sit in front of the TV watching Coronation Street and then shelling the peas and then, like, eating them. And I remember once in the garden, there was a random, like, errant set of potatoes, like red, is it russet potatoes? Like little red potatoes that I found at the back of the garden that weren't part of the normal planting, but must have, like, blown with the seeds or whatever. And I remember, like, digging them up and boiling them. I must have probably been about 11 or 12, and like eating them with just salt and butter and black pepper, and again just thinking, this is the best meal ever.
Is it something you do as an adult, do you think, gardening? I mean, you're incredibly busy. I can't imagine you have a huge amount of time for it at the moment. Is it something you'd like in your life?
I'm actually terrible at it. So when my grandfather died, you know, in my grieving process, because he was like my best friend, I tried to replant the garden and I couldn't do it. I just really? Don't have green fingers. The soil was... I now know a bit more. Like, I knew that the soil just had no nutrients left in it. But at the time, I was like crying and raking and crying and raking. And I just couldn't get anything to grow in that garden. And I think I'm the kind of person who would art direct a garden.
Design a garden.
And then, you know, but I would love to have a big, thriving garden that nourishes me physically and mentally, you know.
So when you moved to London from Wolverhampton to go to Central St Martin's, what was food like then as a student studying in London?
So I was 19 when I moved to London. I came to do fashion communication at Central St Martin's, and it was my dream since I was 12 years old to be in the throngs of the big city. I was like obsessed. I remember going to my interview, which was in the original Charing Cross site, and, you know, dragging my portfolio there. And then when my interview had finished, I kind of wandered down Old Compton Street, and that was my first kind of like London experience. And I was like, wow, this is like so crazy, like Old Compton Street. I'm from Wolverhampton, like, what is this? There's so much stuff going on. But I also remember on my first day of university, there was a girl in my class, Lynn, who was Thai, and she's very connected to the Asian food scene. And she actually said to the whole class, why don't we go to this new restaurant that my friend has opened round the corner? And it was Basaba. It had just opened on Wardour Street. We all went as a class. My class was really small. There was only like 20 of us. We all walked around, all these girls from Central St Martin's, and we went into Basaba, and the tables were big. I'd never seen tables like that before. I'd never seen the concept of a sharing table. And we all ate Thai, and I hadn't eaten Thai. I think I had eaten Thai food when I was like 18 or something, you know, like really late. And I just remember thinking, wow, there are so many flavours in every single thing. And actually Lynn was quite instrumental in my early dining years in London because she was just so obsessed with food. I remember Lynn did a project. I don't know why she was even doing our course because she did not care about fashion at all. She would do any project she would do it about food. I remember she did a whole project on noodles and people looking at her being like, what the hell? Incidentally, Lynn turned out to be a fashion editor-in-chief of a really prominent magazine in Asia afterwards. So she was really good at her thing. But she introduced me to Alan Yao, to all of those restaurants. And I basically spent my first 4 years of my London life in Soho and Covent Garden because I was just always traipsing around those streets. So I would say that I ate pretty well when I was out and about. But at home, I was kind of learning how to cook for myself and also being such a poor student. I remember once this memory, like, is so pitiful. I remember coming downstairs to my student house, and I lived in a house in Tufnell Park with girls who were really close with Pete Doherty. And it was like this kind of indie Camden house that I was so different to my scene, I would just scuttle back to my room and read my books. And I remember coming downstairs one day and the sink was absolutely disgusting with food, like remnants, etc. And I remember taking my meat out of the freezer. I had some beef mince that I'd portioned off because I was quite good at like stretching my food as a student. And I ran it under the tap to to kind of loosen up the iced meat and I dropped it in the sink. And I remember being so horrified and I had to throw it in the bin. I didn't eat it because the sink was so disgusting that I was like, I can't eat this meat and now I'm going to go to bed hungry. So yeah, it was a bit of a mix of like feast and famine being at St. Martin's and kind of living off like people having parties in restaurants, and also because I was assisting a really amazing stylist, I would always eat so much food on set because it would be such good quality food on set. And then I'd always be like, can I take some of these leftovers home? So that's kind of how I maintained my diet during St. Martin's, but it definitely was a high-low situation. But actually, as a student, the thing I did do was perfect my Sunday roast. So
important.
Yeah, every Sunday, whatever student house I was living in over the 4 years, we would all get together and figure out, like, make a roast. And through doing it for years and years and years, I've, you know the right potatoes, the timing. I've got this timing on point. I can turn a roast around and, like, you know, make something out of nothing. And I definitely would say that the Sunday meal was super important, like hangover food as well, you know, when you've been raving. So I did do that during my student years for sure.
Okay, so tell us, what makes a great roast?
Well, for me, because it's very personal,
of course,
it's got to be a mix of textures and strong herby flavors. I think I love garlic and thyme and sage and having all of those flavours in the food. But it took me a long time, especially as a Jamaican, to learn you just don't need to over-season the meat. So Jamaicans tend to like rub spices and everything into their roast meat, but actually I've learnt if you buy an incredible organic chicken, cover it in salt, put it in the oven, it actually tastes divine. The things that I tend to do in my roast, if I'm lazy, I'll just always do a chicken. It's easy. I know exactly how it's going to cook. I love making a stuffing from scratch. So I followed a Martha Stewart recipe, a Thanksgiving stuffing recipe. So I will use bread, crackers, mushroom, celery, rosemary, thyme, sage and parsley, white wine, and mix it all up. And then I spread it out into a tray and bake it. And to be honest, I will just eat it for the next few days. Like, it tastes so good. I also I haven't nailed making a Yorkshire pudding from scratch because I'm a bit scared of hot oil.
Because and you need the hot oil.
You really need the hot oil. But when I was a child, I flipped a pancake with hot oil and it landed on my head and burnt my scalp. And then since then, I'm really, like, nervous around hot oil. So I just buy store-bought Yorkshires. Then I will always have made a gravy with the stock from the last Sunday roast, and I'm essentially just recycling the chicken and the stock, etc., over and over. Then with the roast potatoes, I discovered that actually if you do them with hemp oil, they have this like odd cheesy flavour to them. So I do the thing of like boiling them, you know, fluffing them up and like all of that. But actually, if I cover them in hemp oil, you know, whittle them around some more, put them in the pan with then, you know, whatever normal oil I'd be using, and then the salt and black pepper, and that's great. Sometimes I would add rosemary and garlic and red onion to it. But to me, it's about the stuffing, the potatoes, some really finely shredded cabbage, and I love doing roast carrots and parsnips. And then that's kind of it, really. If I'm feeling indulgent, I will do cauliflower and cheese. But the thing is I try and do diet roasts. So I try and do roasts that are just chicken and vegetables with no potatoes, no cheese, no none of that. It's kind of dull, but at least I feel like I'm getting the flavour without the... But I love it. I'm also good at cornbread. I like a big Sunday meal.
Do you do Christmas? Are you the Christmas cook?
100%. And I'll be experimenting with stuff as well. So, like, with the turkey, I love like the classic American. I love a Martha Stewart vibe for this because she's just done it 1,000 times, right? So I will do a tent on the turkey I was going to say this is so boring, but this is actually what the whole podcast is about.
This is what we love. Like, you know, this is great.
So the way that I do it...
forensic turkey roasting detail, please.
Yeah, so the way that I do my turkeys, I put the turkey on the rack. I'll have made a stock with the neck and everything and put the stock under the turkey, and it starts out white, like almost a clear broth. And then as the turkey drips down over the course of the 4 hours or however the turkey is, it's a really amazing brown, rich gravy. I'll have maple, like I'll have rubbed maple syrup over the top and then covered it with a tinted foil so that it doesn't burn. And then I keep basting the it's like a recycling of dripping the turkey fat and juice dripping into the bottom tray, scooping that over the turkey, but foil tenting it so it doesn't dry out or burn the maple part. And that's my method, and that's worked well for me. My turkey's
never... Can I come? Can I come to yours for Christmas?
If there's no lockdown.
If we're allowed Christmas. Sharmadine, during the week when you're working... You know, you're obviously, you know, very well-known entrepreneur and businesswoman. Do you have power lunches? What are your work lunches like, when we're allowed lunches, that is?
Oh, I love talking about food. So I share my son with his dad 50-50. So I pretty much only cook for 3 days a week or 4 days a week. I have no food in my house the rest of the week because I eat out. So I will have... My son is obsessed with rice. He's so obsessed with rice that I've bought him his own rice cooker for one, like a mini pot rice cooker. And he gets up in the morning at 7 a.m. He makes his rice for his lunch because he doesn't like the school lunches. He will make his own pot of rice, and he basically has rice with everything. So my meals are just based around whatever he wants rice on. We usually have a protein, a green, and rice. And if I'm like trying to not be carby, I won't have the rice and I'll eat a protein and a green. So that means that during Mondays and Tuesdays are kind of my clean eating, and I try and eat light lunches. So I tend to eat soup for lunch at work from a local soup place. The other thing I'll do is just eat plain chicken breast, lettuce, Ryvita. Like I have to eat really minimal lunches because... otherwise, I'll fall asleep in the middle of the day. I've learnt that my metabolism, like, functions really well at 7 a.m., 12 p.m., and then, like, 6 to 8 o'clock. So I have to eat my lunch at 12 o'clock, like, on the dot. It's actually a thing I've written in my user manual for the team. Everyone in the company writes a user manual on themselves, and I'm like, do not schedule anything at 12 o'clock because I will be comatose unless I eat. So I'll eat a really light lunch Mondays and Tuesdays. I'll eat a fairly light dinner Mondays and Tuesdays because then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I get crazy. My office is in Clerkenwell. So my favourite thing to do is to go to St John's and basically eat whatever is non-pork and salad-y vegetable there, and just have a coffee and a donut, and I really miss going there. So yeah, my favourite thing to do is to like walk there and have a lunch and then come back to my office. And then in the evenings, I tend to work quite late. So because I share my son, I don't work late Mondays and Tuesdays. I could pick him up from school, etc. But then on Wednesdays, Thursday, Fridays, I basically might stay at the office till like 9-10 o'clock at night, unless I have a dinner to attend. And my favourite thing to do is to explore either a restaurant in London or go to a friend's house for dinner. But those are my, like, I don't temper what I eat on those days. I don't, like, you know, hold back. And then Saturday I tend to eat fairly light again, and then Sunday is my roast.
And do you have a sweet tooth?
I don't have a sweet tooth. Apart from at the one time of the day when you needed coffee and a cake or something at 3 o'clock, right? But apart from that, I don't really crave sweet things. But if there's a sticky toffee pudding, I'll eat it.
You're only human.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when someone likes steak and they have to try the steak at every restaurant. If I see a sticky toffee pudding, I will eat it. For sure.
I'm the same.
But I'm definitely a savoury person. I love really strong, savoury, spicy, herby flavours.
And recently we've obviously been asking people about Corona and lockdown. I mean, in the past few months, have you been trying out new recipes?
I have, but I don't like cooking for myself. Like, you know, it's kind of boring. I was actually saying, I met with the journalist Harriet who does lunch with the FT, and I was like, can people stop telling me about your boring Zoom lunches? Because it really ruins the vibe of the article, do you know what I mean? Like, I want to know that you're eating something really decadent, and I want to know exactly what the menu is. Like, it's dry. And the thing about being, like, living alone or, like, you know, being with my son is that I just find it a waste to cook incredibly decadent things at home. So I've just done more one-pot things. I've got a slow cooker that I sometimes use. But my short answer is no, really. All I did during lockdown was eat pasta at home, which is something I never do, ever. I just ate so much pasta stuff.
If you could eat anywhere now, sort of post-second lockdown, where do you want to go? What are you missing the most?
It's like asking someone to say who their favourite child is.
I know.
My brain is like racing through every good meal I've
had. A Rolodex of everywhere you could eat.
Do you know what I would eat if I could eat anything right now? Is I'd go to Katz's Deli in New York and I would eat like a giant salt beef, like a Reuben's or something, pastrami. I would just totally indulge in that because it's not just the meal, it's the experience of all of these people around you. I miss the buzziness of restaurants, not just the food. And I think that that's what I miss. I actually was so craving like Jewish deli food and I was at my office. So I went to the Ned and they've gotten rid of the Jewish restaurant there. And I was like, no, I needed that comfort food. So yeah, I would say that partially because I haven't been to America for so long. I would just go to New York and eat all of my favourite spots in New York. I would eat, you know, at Katz's. I would just eat at all of them.
We like to ask all guests what their desert island meal would be. So we know that you are queen of roasts. We know that right now you are craving Jewish deli food. But your ultimate... You can have three courses, it can be one, you can have a drink alongside it. What is your ultimate final meal?
Seeing as it's my final meal, and therefore I don't have to worry about indigestion, I would start with scallops from Orsay. I love them. They're so delicious and buttery and perfect, and I just love them. Then I would move to curry goat with no bones in, rice and peas and coleslaw, because that is just one of my best meals ever, and I can't cook it. I can't cook rice and peas. I can't cook any of these foods. Then I would have sticky toffee pudding.
Has to be sticky toffee pudding.
And the whole way through, I'd be drinking picante or whiskey sours, and then that sloshing food in my stomach. I would never eat such three random things together, but I would definitely want those flavours happening in my mouth. They're definitely all of my favourite tastes.
Sounds wonderful.
I would love a roast, but most of the roast is about the people around you, right, and the serving of it. And if it's my last meal all alone, when I think of myself eating curry goat, I'm usually eating it from a takeaway tub. Because I don't know anyone in London who, like, I don't have that community around me like I do at home. So I just think of myself sitting in my car, eating out of a plastic tub, being like, oh, it's so good. But yeah.
I think that's a really great final meal.
I've got one more point about food, actually. I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, which is kind of part Jewish, part Christian. And, you know, one of the tenets of that is that you don't eat pork or seafood. So I grew up my whole life never tasting bacon, pork, sausages, ham, or eating prawns or calamari or anything like that. And I remember being at a restaurant, a really fancy Japanese restaurant on St. James, with a group of clients when I was a fashion stylist, and they were ordering all of this seafood. And I was like, oh, I can't eat that. And they were like, that is ridiculous. You have to try this snowflake crab. And I was like, no, I can't. But bear in mind, I'm not even religious anymore. So it's like been mentally ingrained to me that these foods are evil. So I remember thinking, okay, he's like, it's fine. Tastes like chicken. People always say that. And then I tried this snowflake crab and it was so insanely delicious that, and I was 28 years old, then I started on a bit of calamari, then a bit of lobster, and now I eat lots of seafood, but not prawns still, because those little eye things make me feel weird.
Do you eat pork?
I don't eat pork. And I think it's really funny how the food culture that is ingrained to us from such a young age basically psychologically affects how we consume food in our adult years. Because there, even though I intellectually know there is nothing wrong with eating pork, I can't emotionally do it, and there's a big disconnect there. So sometimes I see a good sausage and I'm like, I bet that's delicious. But I also know that I would never eat it. And I have to make, the only pork product that I miss out on that I make at home is Scotch eggs. So I'll often buy beef sausage from my local butchers in Notting Hill, and then I will make a homemade Scotch egg with panko breadcrumbs and be delicious. Because it's the only pork product that I'm like, oh, I wish I could have that.
That's so interesting that you found this love for seafood, but pork has remained. I mean, particularly as someone who loves going to St. John, pork's still out of bounds for you.
Yeah, but they know. I will always just say, what's not pork? So I'll eat like lamb kidneys. What else? I'll always eat the broth, a veal broth. I'll eat anything non-pork from St. John's, and I tend to get like two or three in the bar. I will have like lots of small plates. If it's not lunchtime, because sometimes I will go back in the evening as well, I'll have a glass of red wine. But other than that, I do survive without eating pork going there. It's my favourite spot to be.
Sharmadine, I wanted to also ask you about the Bring Beauty Back campaign, which you've been helping run during Corona. I mean, do you think when restaurants are allowed to open, it should be the case that salons are also immediately allowed to open?
I think it's been incredibly difficult for the government to suddenly, overnight, pretend to understand that they know the ins and outs of how every industry works. And I think that what's happened is this year has shown that knowledge gap between policy and people actually understanding this is what happens in those places. So I do have some patience for that lack of understanding, but actually I think it's all small business owners are struggling right now. So, you know, I have friends who are restaurateurs and chefs who are absolutely constantly on anxiety edge, the verge of bankruptcy. And I have salon owners and friends who are the same. And I have creatives and artists who are having to leave London and move back home. So I think it's difficult to say now with the second wave whereby, you know, all industries are closed essentially, like restaurants aren't open, salons aren't open, pubs aren't open, my beauty shop where I get my supplies isn't open. I feel like everyone's struggling and suffering the same. So it's now become less about a division between industries and just more like everyone just wants to get back to normal. We're all a bit fed up.
Sharmadine, thank you so much for joining Table Talk. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm very hungry now.
So are we.
So are we.
Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.